the Sefer Chinuch is talking about mitzvah, the 54th mitzvah. Mitzvah is bezdin ladun aganav b'tashlumin u'b'misa. Like we said, the mitzvah of the bezdin to judge the thief with an appropriate penalty. So Sefer Chinuch says, ladun b'dinei haganav k'mo shekasu b'parsha. Our parsha says, ki yignovish, when a person steals, and is going to describe various penalties that the person is subject to. Inyan hagneva, what does it mean to steal gneva? Why does it mean gneva as opposed to gzela? They're two different terminologies that the Torah uses for stealing something. So one is what you would say theft, and one is, you would call in English, robbery. So theft is if you sneak into someone's property and you take something or you pickpocket, then that is called gneva, that's called stealing. And if you go into a bank and you demand money, you have a mask and you have a gun and you threaten the tellers, then that is called gzela, that is called robbery, to take something by force in public. So this lashon of the Sefer Chinuch is, v'inyan ha-gneva hu alokeach davar mamon chavero mibeisa o mikiso. If you, gneva is if you take someone else's object from his house, you sneak into his house or you pick his pocket, at a time when the owner of the object is not watching you, below yeda, and he doesn't know. V'chol kayotzeb is any type of theft of this kind, where the person does not know what's going on. You don't go up to the person and demand payment or demand something of theirs. Not mugging, you're just theft. That is called gneva. Interestingly, the halachic literature points out that armed bandits who go attack caravans or something traveling from place to place are not considered gazlanim because they're sneaky about it. They're not so brazen because they don't go up in the middle of rob the bank in the middle of the city. They, you know, sneak into caravans, people who are otherwise defenseless, so that's called gneva and agzela. It's a very interesting
buses.
We'll see. It would depend, I guess. In the exact situation. So the literature also discusses what happens. How exactly do you steal something? What, in other words, if you just take someone else's object without performing a kinyan on it, then that is not considered as if you stole it. So, for example, if you're performing kinyan meshicha on an animal, obviously you don't really own it yet. We're going to discuss a little bit later at what point in time you really own the object that you stole. But if, let's say, you're walking into your friend's barn and you're pulling a sheep because you want to steal it, but you're still in his barn, so you didn't perform a kinyan yet, because when you're performing a kinyan meshicha, when you're trying to acquire an object by pulling something, that doesn't work unless it leaves the domain of its original owner.
Store it now.
Right, so if you pull something, if you're performing kinyan meshicha on something being sold in a store, it doesn't work until you leave the store. So too, let's say the person is pulling the animal and it dies before it leaves the barn. The animal dies, so even though he had every intention to steal it, and he started pulling it, and he started taking it, so he's putter, he's exempt from payment because he hasn't technically performed a kinyan on the object yet. However, a kinyan hagba, a kinyan by lifting, works no matter where you are. So if you take the animal and you lift it up with the intention to steal it, then you start carrying it out of the barn and it dies before you leave the barn, then you're chayef to pay back because you have technically stolen it before it actually leaves the rishus, leaves the domain of the... Yeah. So also what happens, it's also a requirement to take something out of someone else's rishus. So if you steal... For example, if you stole holy objects, somebody was makdish an animal as a korban, and then you tried to steal it. So too, you won't be applicable for all the penalties. You have to give it back to him, but you won't be applicable for all the penalties that the Sefer Chinuch is about to discuss, because it doesn't fully belong to the owner. Same too is the case as if you steal truma. When you're mafresh truma from something, you separate the tithe that goes to the priests. So it's no longer yours, technically. It belongs to the priestly tribe. The only thing that you have on it is a sort of domain, ownership called, it's called Tovas Hana'a, which means that you could choose which Kohen you want to give it to, and therefore which Kohen's going to like you, and, you know, you have to all these cheshbonos about what you're going to do with your truma. So in that case, too, since the truma does not fully belong to you once you're mafresh it, then in that case, somebody who steals it would also not be applicable to, not be required to pay all the penalties. Interestingly, though, if you steal a peter chamor, remember what we discussed about peter chamor, that normally the peter of a firstborn kosher animal also belongs to the priests. But a firstborn non-kosher animal, you redeem, and then it's yours. It's completely non-holy animal. You can use it for whatever you want once you redeem it. So if somebody steals your peter chamor before you redeem it, they do have to pay all the full penalties for involved in stealing, because even though it's not fully yours yet to use in whatever fashion you want, as soon as you perform the very easy step of redeeming it, then it becomes fully yours. So since it's roy, it's appropriate, it's possible to easily to become fully yours. So in that case, it's considered completely your property, and the person who steals it would be liable to pay the full penalty incurred upon stealing something. Again, we should emphasize that all the penalties we're about to discuss only occur if you, through theft. Maybe we'll discuss a little bit more why later, but they do not apply if you do gzela, you do armed robbery, do public robbery. In that case, you have to pay the object back, but all these extra penalties do not apply. So let's see what the Sefer Chinuch says about that. Shorish mitzvos hamishpat yadua. Again, for the next several mitzvos, we're going to keep having the same refrain. I don't need to explain why we need all these halachos about how society functions. Of course, every society needs to have rules about how people interact with each other in business, and they can't steal from each other, and they have to put serious penalties involved, because the stealing is really bad midah, and if people are stealing from each other in society, that society really cannot function well. So dineha, the halachos of the mitzvah, kagon tashlume kefil varba v'chamisha. So there is a difference of how much you have to pay depending on what you steal. Any normal object that you steal, you have to pay back the object, and you have to pay back another portion time the object's value. So there's a difference also if you have to pay the actual object itself. You have to pay back the actual object as long as the owner of the object didn't have what's called yush. If he didn't give up hope of getting the object back, but if he had yush, which is he gave up hope of ever getting the object back, then the thief doesn't have to return the exact object that he stole, or he has to just pay for it. And there are different halachos about exactly how much he has to pay depending on how much the price changed. That I'll discuss a little bit later. But that's the case when you steal a normal thing, any regular object. But there's another type of payment, which is tashlume arba v'chamisha, that the Torah says that if you steal a sheep, then you have to pay back the sheep plus four times what the sheep is worth. And if you steal an ox, then you have to pay back five times, because an ox is significantly more expensive than a sheep. So it's considered a much bigger lack for the owner of the object. In terms of Shorshei HaMitzvah, he doesn't go into Shorashim of specific details of the halacha, but I saw, very interestingly, an article recently about how people thought of law in the ancient world, and it's a relationship to helping to answer, you know, when there are seemingly contradictions between different parts of the Torah, then one of the tools that he uses to answer the contradictions is the fact that in ancient law codes, it was never assumed that there wouldn't be contradictions between different parts of the law codes. It was that basically this set of laws was going to be an inspiration for the judge. He points out that there's a difference between what we call nowadays statutory law and common law. So it was sort of a push at the beginning of the 20th century, a little bit earlier, that they were pushing countries to have an exact code of laws, and when the judge makes rules in a case, he has to reference the exact terminology and phraseology of the statute and see how well exactly that applies to the case and write his opinion accordingly. But he says in the way ancient people viewed law was much more flexible. The judge would use the law code as sort of an inspiration have you know, the traditions of how to judge cases, I mean monetary cases, and rule accordingly. He says that, you know, there over all of the ancient Near East, there are a zillion copies of the Code of Hammurabi, copied by different scribes, but we also have records of court decisions. And it said, never once does the decision reference the Code of Hammurabi. Obviously, they knew about it. Obviously, they had all read it, but they didn't. I'm not saying that we can do exactly with what I'm about to say regarding the Torah, but they didn't. The judge didn't feel that he needed to force the decision exactly into the words of the Code of Hammurabi. He said this was the embodiment of the legal tradition of his people, and he ruled accordingly to how, you know, what made sense in the situation. Sort of what we call in halacha shuda d'daini, which means that to a certain extent, the judges can rule according to what they feel is fair and right in a certain type of circumstance. So here too, he says that the reason sometimes there are steers between different parts of the Torah is because it's meant to be to inspire the judges. You don't have to look to exactly. We do use the words to, you know, in terms of the rabbinic tradition, but instead it wasn't law in the old ancient days wasn't thought of in as strict a constructionist type of way as people do nowadays. Again, there are obviously limits to this, and there are important meaning in the words of the Torah, of course. But same, just terms of how the ancient people viewed law in general. So, one of the reasons that he suggests that again, reference my drasha la Shabbos, but the limits to tamei hamitzvos. But one of the possible reasons of why there was such a need for such a severe penalty against stealing sheep and cows is because sheep and cows were somebody's main property, and they're very easy to steal. It's if somebody's in his house, his sheep and cows are roaming the field. Somebody comes along, they're very easy to steal, and it can inflict a very severe financial damage on the owner, much more than other objects. He loses out on work, he loses out on meat, he loses out on all the things the animals buy from him. He could sell it for a very great price. So, since it's so easy to steal, and since the damage on the owner is so great if these items are stolen, so that's why it's such a severe penalty associated with them. So, but you're only chayav for the tashlumei arba v'chamisha, for the paying four and five times the amount, if you do either tovach or mochar. If you kill the sheep, and it has to be, by the way, it has to be a kosher shechita. That if you steal something that's not appropriate to be shechted, if you steal an animal that's already not kosher, that you know to be not kosher, and you shechted, then you're not chayav for all these things. You just chop off his head or shoot it, then you're not chayev for tashlumei arba v'chamisha. The other case where you're chayev for... Yeah, of course. You have to pay back the animal, or the value of the animal, but you don't have to pay the four and five times. The karen, right. The karen, as opposed to the knas, the penalty. The other way that one is chayev for the four or five times recompensation is... if you sell it, but it's not only if you sell it, it's if it leaves your possession in any way, really. If you give it as a present, or you switch it with someone else, you barter it, or anything of that nature, it's also considered to be machar in the parameters of machar, and you'll be chayev for the penalties of paying back three and four times the value of the animal. V'din larog haganov hababa machteres ole mochro bignevaso. So if somebody's coming sneaking in your cellar, you go down, you hear noises in the basement in the middle of the night, you walk downstairs with your nightgown and the nightcap and the candle and the lantern like they used to have in the olden days, you go downstairs and lo and behold, there's somebody sneaking into your cellar, very creepy. And you take out your shotgun, and that's the end of that. So then that's completely an acceptable method of dealing with this person. And we're going to get to more in a second. Selling someone if he can't pay back the value in just a minute, when the Sefer Chen is going to go into a little bit more detail about that, and so will we as well. You can kill them. Yeah. You can kill him. Yeah.
There's no inyan in Judaism to not like to try something else first. Like to try. No,
what are you gonna try first?
I'm saying like he's just.
If you have a stun gun, then fine.
No, but I'm saying like there's no inyan to like try to lock
him. Ain lo damim, the Torah says. Ain lo damim is explicitly you has no.
But
he has
no.
No, stand your ground.
No, yeah. On America, you're over. Like using like excess
you can.
Force?
Oh, no, no. If there is a burglar in your house, yes.
No, I'm curious. What is American law say
American
though?
Law definitely
depends
upon the state, but generally speaking, the rule is that if the burglar is inside your house, you know, probably no. If he's standing out in the front of the yard, that's but if he definitely is in your house, so then you are allowed to use deadly force.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the same thing.
And sometimes you have to warn them and stuff. Maybe that's sort of what you're thinking. Sometimes you have to say something.
No.
But then what if he has a gun and you warn him, you shout, hey, and then he kills you?
You're not obligated to endanger, if you say, stop or I'll shoot, that's how people get shot, like burglars.
Right, exactly. So, but the Torah specifically tells you that mode of thinking is not correct. That since it says, ain lo damim, it says you should consider him as if his blood is not red, so to speak. That you should consider him as a dead man. You should have no compunctions whatsoever about standing your ground, about shooting him. Yeah. And again, there are different types of halachos. If the animal got more expensive, not more expensive, sorry, that's the next case. But let's say you stole an animal and then it got pregnant and then it gave birth to more animals. So what happens with those animals that it gave birth to? Omach masotza. What happens if the thief invests money in the animal and causes it to become, causes it to increase in value, or to let's say get more wool or to get more benefit out of the animal than could be assumed at the time that he stole it. So normally, I think it corresponds to the amount that he put. If he really put in, then if he put an effort into it, then he gets to keep the other stuff that the animal produced.
You mean like the babies?
The babies, or if he stole a pregnant animal, it's pregnant already, so he didn't do anything. He doesn't get to keep it. But if he worked it and he worked at it and he took the stuff, then he does get to keep it. Right, but if he didn't put any work into it, so then he doesn't. V'din gneva shehukra. So what happens if he didn't? It's not that it produced anything, but rather it's simply there's fluctuations in price. Let's say it got more expensive. So, shemeshalim keren kein sheganav, v'tashlume hakfalim kishas hamada bedin. So in that case, you pay back the base value like the time that you stole. So if you stole it, it was worth 2 zuz, now it's worth 4 zuz. So you have to pay back 2 zuz. But if you're obligated to pay either kefil, or the double, or arba v'chamisha, or you have to pay the 4 times and 5 times, then in that case, you would pay the penalty according to its current value, or not necessarily current value, but to the time where he first appeared in front of the court. So he really has to pay a lot. V'din ganav sheganav miyad haganav. So let's say this person who stole the animal or whatever it was, somebody else stole from the second thief stole from the first thief. Shein misham kefil echamim. So the second guy doesn't have to pay kefil at all because the animal you have to steal in order to be required to pay back all the penalties. The thing has to be in the original owner's rishus, has to be on his property, and it has to be, or in his domain, and it has to belong to him. So if it didn't belong to the second ganav, it didn't belong to the first ganav, I'm sorry, and it wasn't in the rishus of the original owners. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't there some condition in which basically you could a ganav can be kone? The thing he steals?
Ganav can be kona, the thing he steals with Yush, and if he does a Maisa. So, for example, if the first owners had Yush, they gave up hope of ever getting the animal back, and then only at that point the Ganav did Tavach U'machar, then he, let's say it was an animal. Right. But let's say he did Tavach U'machar, and he, so then the person that he gave it to or sold it to now gets to keep the animal, because the first ganav, right, he did acquire ownership of the animal when there was yush and shin rishus. That is true. There are some cases where it would be considered to belong to the first ganav and be in his rishus, but we're talking about a normal case. 100%, right, yes. Talking about a normal case where there's no yush or any change of, they didn't do anything, so in that case, then the second thief would not have to pay a kefil to either party. Afilu kodem yush, right. V'din gonav nichse hektesh, so let's say you stole something that belonged to the temple treasury, or that you were makdish as a korban, so in that case, again, as I said, you would only have to pay the karen, you would not have to pay any kefil, because it didn't belong to the original owner. O nichse goy, let's say the thing belongs to a non-Jew, so the first thing that we should point out is it is aser midaraisa, it's biblically forbidden to steal from any person, including, the Rambam even says, even goy ovid avodah zarah, forget a regular goy who's nice and observes the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach and all the things he's supposed to do. But even if the goy actually worships avodah zarah, it's absolutely forbidden, midaraisa, to steal anything from the goy. It's also forbidden for the goy to steal. That's one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and the penalties for that are even more severe for the goyim. But that's important to say. It's interesting because the Rambam points out, he says that it's usur even to steal for a goy midaraisa, and then he goes on to say it's also usur to steal derech schok. It's usur to steal in just as if you're playing, and it's also usur to playfully. Or to steal and then to give back, and then he says the Rambam says kol ze usur. He says it's all usur because, so you shouldn't ingrain in yourself the midah of stealing things. So I have to check to see what all the commentators say about it, but it almost sounds a little bit like he's saying that's only usur midarabanan. He says, first, because the beginning of the sentence is usur to steal from anyone, even a goy over the bodhazar midah raisa. And then he says, these other things, like stealing playfully and to steal and give back, presumably immediately, is only usur because it's usur because you shouldn't get yourself in the habit of doing so. It almost sounds like it's only usur midarabanan or on some lesser level, which is very interesting. Interesting to point out, but according to that, it should also be usur to steal the afikomen because right?
People ask that question.
Mr. Berkowitz, you wanted Pesach. I gave you Pesach. It said it's also according to what we said that it says usur to steal even playfully, so it should be usur to steal the afikomen as well. So they're heterim since it's all for the tzorech mitzvah to help them get them involved in the story, and because they're only ktanim unless you're older and you steal the afikomen. Yeah, but even so, it seems like it should be usur midarabanan at least.
I don't know. My brother held it hostage for a long time.
So there are big rabbis who did indeed not allow the afikoman to be stolen in their house. But there are other big rabbis who did allow it. They all considered it to be part of the... It's interesting, one of the pshatim in Chotvin Matzah, the one of the ways you get children involved is that Chotvin Matzah, some say you eat the matzah really early or something like that, but others say is that people give... not steal, but take matzah from each other as part of the way of getting children involved and getting excited about the Seder, that they say weird things are happening. So, it's one of the pshatim and steal, but does it really stealing here? It's more of like stealing that he really holds hostage and he wants to get it back and he doesn't give, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Minag Yisrael Torah, everybody steals the afikomen. I never got that way. Yeah. Usually... Where I grew up, always we stole the afikomen and hid it from my father, and then he would have to pay. He would have to pay dearly to get it back. And then he would say, I went to yeshiva high school, and I know that you don't really need the afikomen. You could use any matzah as the afikomen, so don't raise your demands too high, or I'll just use a different matzah for the afikomen. There's a famous story also about Rav Pam's mother. that she, even though the kids in their house did steal the afikoman, she always say, "Don't call it stealing. Call it taking. Just don't call it." Zog nish ganvenin zog zunehmen. Don't call it just taking. Anyway. But it should be pointed out, just again emphasized, for all those who have other ideas somehow, that it's completely osur midaraisa to steal from any person, not just Jews. But it's only to Jews that you have to pay kefil or arba v'chamisha. It's only if one Jew steals from another Jew. That some people seem to have other ideas about this. They seem to think that it's okay when it's really not. There is, of course, a halacha that if the goy makes a mistake by himself, so for example, he's in your store and you're in his store and he gives you the wrong amount of change or something like that. If he makes the mistake by himself, then technically speaking, you don't have to return it because he did it by mistake. What? But if there's any chance whatsoever, he might find out about it, then you're supposed to give it back because it's a Kiddush Hashem. It's a Chil Hashem if he finds out about it. But there's Tautos Yisrael is Asar. If a Jew makes a mistake, but that's a different type of case. They're certainly not allowed to take anything that's not yours on purpose. O Hagonev Avodim Ushtaros VeKarkos. If you steal slaves or documents or land, so in any of those cases, you also would not have to pay back the extra penalties because they're not. There has to be an actual object. It says in the parsha, it talks about kalim and things like that. So it has to be an actual object that you can bring into. That's an object. That's not either something that's an eved. That's not an object, or it has to be metalton, exactly, or a document that shows your debts to someone else. If it shows your debts to someone else, then that's not a direct object of value. It just shows that somebody owes you money and you can collect based on that document. But since the document itself is of no value, then per se, then he doesn't have to pay kefil and arba v'chamisha. V'agone b'shabes, uva alav chiyuv chil shabes u'gneva ke'echad. So what happens if you steal on Shabbos and you're stealing is concurrent with your violating Shabbos. The most obvious case of this is, let's say, you take the object, you're in someone's house, and you take an object, and you throw it outside to the street from the house, and then you go to the street, and you pick up the object and take it home. So in that case, you would actually not have to pay back at all, because we have a principle that if you're subject to the penalty of Malkus or of... But here, in this case, you'd be subject to the penalty of Misa's Bezdin. Unless somebody saw you, but you, theoretically, you'd be subject to the penalty of the death penalty if somebody saw you. So since you'd be subject to much greater penalties than having to pay back, then you would not have to pay back in this case. So you don't have to pay back. Okay, we got that. You have to pay back using the best of your possible possessions. Vim nimkar bignevaso shetzarech sheyu domav kidmei hagneva opachos. So we have a principle that if you steal and you can't pay it back, you have absolutely no money to pay back, then the bezdin sells you as an eved ivri. And that only applies to men. We pointed out that it's a difference of opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether a woman can sell herself as a slave. But everybody agrees. The Rambam says that it's across the board that a woman cannot. But everybody agrees that a woman is never sold for failing to pay back something that she stole. But let's say you stole something that's worth 50 dinars and you're worth... You're worth 100 dinars, so the Bezdin doesn't sell you, and they give you 100 dinars, and you say pay back. It has to be, your value, you have to be worth less than the object that you stole. In other words, you can't... That's other,
humiliating.
Huh?
That's humiliating.
Yeah. So if you, let's say, the object you stole is worth 100, you're only worth 50, so then the Bezdin sells you, you pay back the 50 immediately, based on the price you got from the sale, and then you have to pay back the rest of the 50... and the rest of the kefil and arba chamisha, when if your stealing is subject to such penalties, when you get free from your servitude and you get more money, and then you have to pay back at that point. Aval hayu yoser eino nimkar, if you're worth more than the value of the object, you're not sold. V'dinei shomer sheganav nignav mi beiso. It's also considered to be fully stealing if you're watching the object and you different kinds. We'll get the next, not next mitzvos, but in a few mitzvos from now, we get into the different chilukim, but the differences between different types of guardians. So if you stole it, then you're considered fully a ganav. Oh, nignami be. So let's say the object was stolen from your house. Whether the person has to pay the full penalties for that because it wasn't stolen from his rishus. V'din isur knias gneva miyad ganav. So what happens if you want to buy an object but you suspect that it's stolen? So you're not supposed to buy it. You're not supposed to buy it because the idea is that if you have a principle, you're not supposed to do what's called machzik yedei over avera. You're not supposed to encourage people to sin. So if there are a lot of different halachos about this, but basically you have to use your judgment if there's a reasonable chance that the object that you're interested in purchasing is stolen goods. So for example, if you go to a shepherd and the shepherd is selling, let's say wants to sell you a cup of milk, which is not entitled to because the shepherd doesn't own the flock. The owner of the flock owns the flock and he wants the milk for himself. But the shepherd wants to make a little money on the side, so he milks the sheep and he gives you a cup. And he wants to sell it to you, so you're not allowed to buy it. But if he made tons of cheese and he wants to sell you 5 blocks of cheese, then you're allowed to buy it because presumably the owner of the flock knows about this. He can't get it under the owner of the flock's nose that he stole so much milk that he's now in the cheese business. But you have to use your judgment to decide if there's a reasonable chance that this item is stolen or not. I remember someone, my relatives told me once that there was a fellow who was obviously not Jewish on the street in the city, and he was selling Sfarim, expensive Sfarim. So how did he get Sfarim?
Now what if you, there's a quarter of a store where they offer to not charge you sales tax if you pay cash.
Ooh. That's very interesting.
It's a question.
I know somebody was arrested for that.
There are times when you go, there are stores which will say, if you pay cash, I won't charge you sales tax.
I know other Jewish men who went to Rikers Island.
No, that's very interesting. That's
because at that point you're essentially encouraging him to it's not your obligation to pay the sales tax, it's his, but you could say maybe he's giving you a discount of 8.75% or something like that just because he likes you or
reports the tax after I pay for this item.
No, but you're still, it's being machzik yedei over avera. You're encouraging him. If you pay cash, then you're encouraging him not to pay sales tax.
Oh, but that's it's not your.
Yeah. You can't do lift neighbor. You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to help.
Right here. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a harder one, which is you hire somebody to tutor your child.
Yeah.
And he says, just on being paid in cash.
Yeah. Is that?
And we asked a rabbi who was until very recently associated with this shul, and he said, especially if you have other reasons to think the person is a good person, you think l'tov, and do not assume that you know why he's asking for cash. There may be a lot of reasons, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was the answer. That was a trick question.
I mean, but it's so widespread that the thing with stores taking wanting cash so they don't have to pay sales tax. That it's
in Ava's wild widespread.
Right.
Yes.
It's hard to.
Not only stores, I mean caterers. That's the bigger case.
But that might be a thing where it's so big that is it really possible that the government doesn't catch them? I mean, if it's...
I mean, that happened with the flowers for our wedding.
So this, I mean, it's so widespread that it's... Again, you have to... But you're... Yeah, you have to get everyone to start to refuse to pay unless they start charging sales tax. Well, I... That's a really a good question. It requires a lot of thought. Seemingly, on the simple level, it should really not be permissible. Right, no, there are stores that, I mean, I remember I once went to a store, I don't want to say what kind, so as not to cast aspersions on any particular group, but they said, I pulled out my credit card to pay, and they said, no, don't pay with credit card, if you pay with credit card, we're going to have to charge you tax. Like, yes. what are you thinking?
Yeah. There actually was a dairy restaurant in the years ago,
people, great, people.
Which always only took cash.
Yeah.
People didn't trust their shkocha.
Because of that reason?
Because they said anybody who's not afraid of the only, he would not take checks, he would not take anything except for cash. And there's only one reason anybody could think of for that. So they figured if he wasn't afraid of the the tax people, then he probably wasn't too worried about anything.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
I don't know.
Fighter.
Okay. Umisha Konami Amadino im Habailim, because there's no Yush yet, so then the person has to return the object because it never belonged to the ganav, and therefore once he sold it never belonged to the buyer. So that's something you have to find out when you find a stolen object. I mean, you buy a stolen object. The yeser prateha, all the rest of the details of stealing, mivarim perek shvi mikama, it's all explained in the seventh perek above akama. Perek Shmini mi Sanhedrin, and the eighth parak of Sanhedrin, Ushlishi Metzia, third parak of Amatzia, Vimakomos Me'ate, Matem, Bechsub, Miksubas, Vikidushin, and Shavuos. And in a few places in Ksubas and Kidushin, and in Shavuos. Venoheges Bizcharim, Shaleim Lasos Din. The main mitzvah is applicable as regarding males because it's their obligation to perform, they're the judges. And any three people who have real smicha for an Eretz Yisrael, they can require someone to pay tashlumi arba v'chamisha, because we saw before that only smuchim can judge dine knosis, that the dinim regarding a penalty. Nowadays, if you steal an object, the regular dayanim we have nowadays who don't have real smicha, they can only require you to pay back the value of the object. They can't require, or the object itself, they can't require you to pay tashlumi arba v'chamisha because it doesn't fulfill the requirements that are the requirements for what people nowadays are allowed to judge, which is it has to be something that's matsui, it has to be something that's common, and it has to be something that sheish v'chisar and kis, has to be something that causes financial loss if you wouldn't judge these types of cases, and this does not. The only thing that causes financial loss is the actual value of the object. But the extra penalties, the kefil and the arba v'chamisha, are just bonuses if somebody steals your object. They don't cause you any loss if the ganav would fail to pay that. And that's why also if you can't afford to pay back the kefil and the arba and chamisha, so then you're not sold as a slave. You're only sold as a slave. You can't afford to pay back the actual value of the object. Just as an addendum. If they don't have real smicha, then they can only require you to pay back the object that was stolen or its value. But selling the person as an Eved Ivri, as we saw before when we talked about Eved Ivri, is only applicable. Even smuchim didn't do it unless there was a yovel. So that hasn't been done for a very long time, even since... Okay, mitzvah's bezdin ladun bedinei hever. So the mitzvah of the bezdin to judge on the principles of hever, which are shein v'regel, that if the animal damages with its teeth or with its legs. Ladun benizke shein v'regel, to judge with these types of damages, kolomar... If you cause someone else damage, that caused by your animal's teeth or its feet. You brought your animal into someone else's field, as opposed to that way around, of course, where we saw that you would not have to pay damages. And it starts munching on his plants, either by eating them or it tramples them, the plants that are growing in there, that kills them. That he has to pay now exactly the amount that he caused damage, its full value from the best of his property. Shenamar, ki yaver ish, that if a person causes damage in someone else's field, that the Chazal tell us that this means shein. Umashikasuv achar kach v'shilach es b'iro, Perishul zichronam livracha dahainu regel. So then it says another type of terminology. Veshilach, as we already sent his damage, it's consuming. Then the Chazal explained that this part of the pasuk is talking about regel. It's trampling. V'nemar al shnei ametav sodeu ametav karmo yisham. The best of it says, the Torah says about both, that the best of his fields and the best of his vineyards he should pay back. Shorish mitzvah samishba yadua. We know why we have these laws. That the places that one is liable for the damages one causes through the teeth and the legs are in the in Rishus HaNizak, what's called. That it has to be on the property of the person upon whom the damage is being inflicted. But if it's in Rishus HaRabim, if it's in a public domain, then one is not chayev for the damages that one's caused by one's animal in this manner. The chiluk hadin, but there's a difference in this regard. Beocheles masheroi lo lechol malamash einoroi. That it depends if it's eating something that it's normal for it to eat and it's not normal for it to eat. So if it eats something that it's not normal for it to eat, so then you'd be exempt. But if it eats something that's only edible to it in an emergency basis and is not normal part of the animal's diet, so then you would not have to pay the value of what you caused, the damage that you caused, but rather, for example, if it's in Rishus Harabim, if it's in Rishus HaRabim, then you would only have to pay the damage as much as it derived benefit. So if it's in the Rishus of the person who was damaged, then you have to pay anyway. But if it's in Rishus HaRabim, then you only have to pay according to what the animal derived benefit. So, in other words, if it's not normal for it to eat a certain type of food and it ate that type of food, then you view it as if it ate the food that it was normal for it to eat. So, for example, if it ate duck, which is expensive, and normally this animal only eats barley, which is much less expensive, then you have to pay that amount of barley So if it ate, you have to pay the amount of, you have to view it as if it ate barley and was satisfied to that degree and pay accordingly. Kiyon parash achla se'orin v'chamor sh'achla karshinin. Odagim, so let's say a cow ate barley, which apparently is not normal, and if a donkey ate a certain type of plant or fish, the chazir sheachal basar, if a pig ate meat.
Who's owning a pig?
Well, you can own a pig. Who's owning a pig? You can own it, sell it to Graham. You can use it for work. You can ride on it, give your kids rides. I don't know. The chelav shalikle gets a shemen, and if the dog lapped up oil, which apparently is also not normal, the chasul she'achal tamarim, a cat ate dates, im nanes she'meshalemes mashanes. If it derived benefit from it, then you have to pay according to what it derived benefit from. But if it's something that it's completely not normal for it to eat, like if it ate, like you said, a can, if it ate a vessel or something of that nature, then, yeah, but sometimes animals eat things that they're not supposed to eat. So in that case, then you wouldn't have to pay at all. The Yeser Proteha, oh, by the way, there's another point in Rishus HaRabim, if it's walking in Rishus HaRabim, and it steps on something, and the thing it steps on shoots out and hits something else, causes damage, that's a special din. That's called Chatzi Nezik Tzroro. So if it does that, then you have to pay half the value of the damage that it caused and not the full value, because it's considered somewhat normal for it to do that. But especially Gzeres HaKasu, that you still have to pay half the value. And that actually, interestingly, you'd think that would be a knas, because it has such weird rules associated with it, that would be considered to be a penalty and not actually just a monetary recompensation. But it's actually considered to be just a monetary compensation. It's very strange. Chatzi Nezek Tzroro says, we even judge that nowadays with our current rabbis, who normally don't have the authority to judge damage cases that involve interesting laws. But in that case, they do, actually. V'yaser Proteo, the rest of the details, Begitin uvekama, we discussed the Maseches Gitin and Bavakama, V'hasa Amrin on Perek Achovel, Kika Marava, Shor Beshor, Govinosa Bevovel. So the Rava has a statement over there that in Chutz Laaretz, when we don't have real smicha, then we judge cases of an animal that caused damage to another animal. That would apply also. It depends. The different parts of the body, if it caused damage in different ways, could fall into different categories. Probably get into more detail about that later. So, Bishen Beregel, Demuad Mitchilasa Ninhu. That it's not, in other words, for the halachos of Knossos that you're not allowed to judge in Bavel, then you have the specific differences of halacha regarding one that's a tam and that's a muad, if it's normal to do this thing or not normal to do this thing. So here you don't have to use your expertise, your halachic expertise, to determine what's normal. It says, Shein v'regel are muadim mitchilasan, that from the very beginning of its life, it's normal to do these things, so it's obvious, and you don't need such halachic expertise to judge these things. That's why we're allowed to do it nowadays. That the mitzvah is mainly applicable to males because they could be the ones to judge and not women. Obviously, the actual laws of who's liable to pay what are applied to women as well. Bain hiziko husku, whether they're the ones who caused the damage or had the damage caused them. Uvezdin haover aleva lo dan dinze kemoshikasu bitelase. And if the Bezdin did not judge, then it failed to perform a positive commandment.